Eve's entire cable car had started to move. As Nick steadied himself against the walls of his own cabin, he realized that he was moving too. The cable cars were working, moving up the suspension lines and scaling the hill.
"What's happening?"
Cassie asked. Tears streamed down her cheeks.
"Why are we moving?"
"Someone has switched on the cable cars." It was the only thing that made sense. One of the cable car's windows was pressed in and about to come loose completely, but it would all be okay now. They were moving away, rising up in the air where the mob could not reach them. All except one. The large Asian man was hanging from the door and had managed to get one of his arms through the gap. He was clawing at them and trying to make his way inside as his legs dangled in mid-air. The car continued climbing upwards, but their passenger held on. Nick kicked at the Asian man's arm, but the blow did not seem to register. He just snarled and clawed even more furiously as he tried to get at the passengers inside the car.
"Screw this," said Jan.
He took two steps backwards against the opposite wall and then leapt forward, delivering a hefty kick to the centre of the cabin's metal door. Its rusty hinges gave way, and the entire sheet of metal, along with its infected hanger-on, went plummeting to the ground below. Nick peered out the gap. The Asian man hit the muddy ground 50 feet below them and shattered. It looked as though every bone in his body had snapped off in the wrong direction. Despite that, the man was still moving around and trying to get up.
"They don't give up, do they?" Nick commented, more to himself than the others. "It's like they don't feel pain."
"Everything feels pain, men,"
said Dash, standing up beside him. Nick shook his head. For some reason, the infected did not. They didn't feel anything except rage and hunger. They were animals, monsters, demons. Nick finally accepted that the infected were beyond saving and that life was now purely about survival. He knew that understanding would lead to a big change for all of them. No one would make it through the days ahead intact as the people they were before. They would be forced to adapt, or they would die. Nick finally accepted that James and Deanna were gone, and his entire life along with them.
"I don't even know who I am anymore. Guess I'm going to find out."
Nick gazed down at the treetops passing by beneath the cable car as they ascended the hill. The woods were getting thicker the higher up they got. Once the snarling mob at the bottom of the hill was out of sight, the view was actually quite breathtaking. The woods seemed to go on forever. Their autumn-coloured leaves were never-ending swirls of orange and red. 100 feet above the ground, and things were once again peaceful. Nick was yanked backwards and thrown violently to the floor of the cable car. He shook his head, dazed and confused.
"What the hell?"
Jan and Dash were standing over him.
"I knew I couldn't trust them. Now I'm going to pay for it."
Jan smashed Dash in the ribs with his fist, like a heavyweight boxer, knocking the wind out of the smaller man and doubling him over. Then he shoved Dash backwards, right through the open doorway. Hundreds of feet in the air. Nick leapt to his feet as Dash's screams faded towards the ground below. The sound of him hitting the treetops and smashing through the branches was sickening. It wasn't even clear if the snapping sounds were from tree limbs or Dash's bones.
"What the hell did you just do?"
Nick cried out.
"Saved your life," said Jan calmly. "Dash was just about to send you on your merry way before I decided he was the one who ought to go. Just ask Cassie."
Nick stared at Cassie, who was sitting nervously on the cabin's bench. She nodded to him.
"He's telling the truth. Dash gave Jan a wink behind your back. He was about to push you out until Jan pulled you out of the way."
"What? But why? Why would he want to kill me?"
Jan huffed as if the answer were obvious.
"Because he tried to take liberties with Cassie last night and you weren't going to let it go. In fact, he was planning to get rid of Dave too, Carl as well if need be, but that kind of resolved itself when Catherine reappeared."
Nick sat down on the bench beside Cassie, feeling unsafe to be anywhere near the open door after what had just happened.
"I don't understand," he said. "Weren't you his friend?"
"Dash? That gang-banging piece of shit."
Jan shook his head.
"No way. I just got stuck with him when the prison guards were killed and our transport was sprung." He pointed at René, who was silent as always. René's not a problem, but Dash was a degenerate. I've seen him do some real nasty shit the last 48 hours. Me and René were already looking to ditch him when we ran into you and Eve in the woods.
Nick looked at Cassie and frowned. So, Jan didn't, you know, hurt you?
She shook her head solemnly.
No. Carl and I were fooling around in the kitchen. He was on top of me when something hit him from behind. It was Dash. He came at me and tore off my shirt. Then Jan came and stopped him.
Jan shrugged. René saw Dash get up in the night and go into the kitchen. He shook me awake. We knew he'd be up to no good, so I went after him. Turns out I was right. I caught him red-handed and told him to go back to the restaurant before I beat the hell out of him. Usually he's not the type of guy to back down, but I think he understood I wasn't playing around. Then you turned up, brother, and got the wrong idea.
Nick looked at Cassie. Why didn't you tell me at the time? Jan told me he would deal with Dash, but I had to keep quiet, otherwise Dash would hurt more people.
If everyone found out about it, Dash would have kicked off. He's a loose cannon. When I got back after my conversation with you, he wanted to know what was up and why you had got involved. I told him that you wanted answers. Dash wasn't happy being told what he could and couldn't do, so he told me he was going to take you out, along with Dave and Carl, then hole up with all the women at the restaurant.
You told him you'd help, Nick surmised, flabbergasted by what he was hearing.
Jan nodded. I did, yeah, but I planned to take him out first, or at least try to ditch him. Then the alarm woke everyone up, and things kind of took on a life of their own. It wasn't until we started climbing this hill that an opportunity presented itself. Dash gave me a wink, letting me know he was about to take you out, so I took him out first. You can thank me later. I'll thank you now, said Nick. I owe you. Don't sweat it.
No, said Nick. I judged you wrong. I treated you like a criminal, and that was unfair.
Not really. I am a criminal. In fact, I was a pretty rotten piece of shit for a long time. Even my own son Damien didn't want to know me after a while. He headed up north to set up a furniture business with a guy he met in a pub. Not seen him in years. I think losing the respect of my son was what made me want to sort myself out, and that's exactly what I did. One day, I'll find my boy and make things better. Tell him I'm proud of him for finding his own way and not ending up like his old man.
For a second, Jan seemed to get teary, but he scratched at his beard, blinked, and then seemed okay again.
No, brother, I can honestly say that after 8 years inside, my intentions have been pure for at least the last five. I'm not the same man I was when they put me inside, but that's a story for a different day. Well, I hope one day you get to tell me all about it, said Nick, standing up and moving over to the open door again. He kept safely to one side and peered out at the tree canopy below. It was so thick now that it was like a bed of leaves beneath them. Whatever fate had befallen Dash had been obscured by the thick foliage, and that was probably for the best. Nick had seen enough death for one morning. The cable car reached the final third of its ascent, and he squinted up at the approaching summit and the concrete platform that topped it. It was hard to be sure, but he thought he could see someone standing there, ready to receive them. That person must have been the one who had started the cable cars. That person was their saviour. But who the hell are they? He thought, as the cable car neared the top of the hill.
Part 2. Top of the World. Chapter 12. 28 hours earlier. Annalisa washed her hands in the steel sink and watched the blood drain away with the cold water. The birth had been a success. Rita, one of the zoo's Clydesdale horses, had delivered a healthy 80-pound foal and seemed to be recovering well. Annalisa had provided very little assistance and had only been there to oversee the pregnancy and guide the birth. Now that it was over, she was looking forward to getting back home and resuming the sleep she had been woken from at 3 a.m.
That went really well, I thought, said Bradley, Ripley Heights' resident veterinary nurse. It was he who had called Annalisa at home when Rita had gone into labour. Despite the lack of complications with the delivery, the young man had gone very pale. It was likely his first delivery, Everyone felt woozy the first time. Annalisa smiled at Bradley, while also stifling a yawn. Yes, it was completely by the book. Good stuff. You just need to make sure that Rita allows her foal to suckle, but other than that, nature should take care of itself. Bradley smiled back at her. In fact, he was beaming. He looked cute, like a boy with a new bike. It was pretty bloody amazing, to tell the truth, he said enthusiastically. I've never seen anything like it. You'll see many more births, trust me, she said. In fact, assisting a birth is one of the few parts of the job that never gets old. Bringing new life into the world is a gift, something that should never be taken for granted. Bradley nodded thoughtfully. A gift, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. So, are you off back home now? She pulled her green woolen cardigan from a nearby clothes peg and wrapped it around herself. Too bloomin' right I am. I'm exhausted. I'd only been in bed a few hours when I got your call. One of the downsides of being a vet on call, huh? The worst one, she said. I need my sleep. Always have. Sorry I had to wake you. I couldn't have done it without you, though. You were amazing. It's no problem. She gave her hands one last rinse in the sink and wiped them dry on a towel. I'll be back here on Wednesday to do my monthly checkups. Will you be here? I'll be around, as usual. Annalisa nodded. She respected the fact that Bradley lived on the park grounds and pretty much worked 7 days a week. He was young, eager to gain experience, and truly loved his work. But she thought he'd be better off having some semblance of a life, too. He was a young, average-looking bloke with a good job. There was more to the world than a modest zoo on top of a hill. You should get out more, she said. You'll end up working yourself to death before you're 30. You need to find a balance between work and life. Turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream. Bradley raised an eyebrow. Did you come up with that yourself? No, John Lennon did. But if you can't trust the Beatles, who can you trust? Just don't work yourself to death. He shrugged. I enjoy it. Tell you the truth, I sometimes like spending time with the animals more than I do people. Sad, huh? A little bit, but I know what you mean. She really did understand the peaceful tranquility that being around animals brought, and how it was the total opposite of the stress and anxiety that being around people caused. But that's a dangerous road, she added. You'll end up a hermit. Get yourself out on the town, grab a drink and a girl, and be irresponsible for a night. You fancy going with me? He asked. Annalisa spluttered at the unexpected question. Me? I'm almost 10 years older than you are. You can find far better company than me. I don't think so. I'd like to get to know you better. Annalisa was surprised. She had no idea that Bradley thought of her in such a way. She didn't know what to say or even how she felt about the suggestion. It had been years since she'd dated anybody. For good reason. I'm damaged goods. I'll think about it, Bradley, she said. See you Wednesday. He seemed a little disappointed, but not devoid of all hope. In all honesty, she was not turning him down, just stalling for time while she considered her options. She never did anything without weighing up the pros and cons first. It was too easy in life to make mistakes and fill your head with regrets. She often thought fast, but she always thought smart. She headed out of the stable's washroom and stepped into the concrete corridor which led past the four stalls housing the zoo's Clydesdales. The reek of oiled leather and musky smells filled the air. Rita was laying down in the first stall, cleaning her mewing foal with her coarse tongue. The stallion, Cassius, was in the booth next to her, sniffing at the air with interest. The proud father. At the end of the corridor, she turned the deadbolt on the block's exit door and stepped outside. The cold atmosphere of dawn pinched at her cheeks and slapped away some of her tiredness. It didn't stop her from letting out a long, drawn-out yawn, or rubbing at the fuzziness behind her eyelids. She glanced at her watch. It was 6 a.m. The birth had been a long one, even if not particularly complicated. She hoped she wasn't too tired to drive. Rush hour would be approaching soon, and she was feeling like a zombie, dead on her feet. Let's just be honest. I'm hungover. What Annalisa had not told Bradley was the reason she'd gotten so little sleep in the first place. She had passed out drunk at 1 a.m, alone in her flat, not even making it to her bed from the couch. It was the same way she ended most evenings, but they didn't usually result in her being called out 2 hours later to attend a birth. Why am I such a mess? Like I don't know the answer to that question. Still, it's been 3 years. It was her own fault. Annalisa had been a vet for 7 years now and should have been used to being on call. It was part of her vocation, no different to a plumber getting shit on his hands. Just one of the downsides. All jobs had them. She gave her shoulders a vigorous rub and got going. The sun was balancing on the horizon, chasing away the darkness with its amber glow. The various enclosures of the petting zoo were filled with sleeping animals that would soon awaken, or nocturnal species that were preparing for slumber. The silence of the night would soon give way to the snuffling of pigs and the bleating of goats, not to mention the motorized whirring of the fairground rides that littered the park and would be operating soon. Up ahead were the zoo's only truly exotic inhabitants, a small family of orangutans that had been donated to the park several years ago by a failing Scottish zoo. It was a mystery why the owners had ever accepted to house the pair of primates, when all they were prepared for at the time were the various domestic animals at the petting zoo. Annalisa imagined they saw it as a lucrative tourist attraction to complement the park's various rides and amusements. It was an immoral way to view such magnificent creatures, but at least time and money had been spent ensuring the orangutans were given a suitable habitat. Their half-acre plot at Ripley Heights put their former Scottish habitat to shame. Eventually, the two primates had even been content enough to breed. They had a 1-year-old infant male with them now. They're a little family, she thought, with a degree of melancholy that could even have been jealousy. Jealous of an orangutan? That's a new low. She decided to stop for a moment and take in the beauty of the animals before she reached her car and headed home. The female, Lily, was currently awake. She was cradling her sleeping infant on the large grassy mound that sloped down on all sides into a dugout moat. It was landscaped in such a way as to prevent escape. The walls around the moat were a good 15 feet high from inside the enclosure. At the rear of the space was a green-painted bungalow that offered the primates a warmer refuge during winter, and was also an ingress point for the zoo's staff to enter the enclosure. Annalisa waved at Lily and was moved when the female orangutan waved right back at her. It wasn't so much a surprise, as Lily was often receptive to humans, happy to interact, but it was still a heartwarming experience to be looked upon and acknowledged by such a magnificent being. She scanned the enclosure for Lily's mate, Brick, and found him sprawled out in the habitat's mangrove tree. He was sleeping soundly, and every few seconds one of his limp legs would flinch and jump. His snores filled the air. Lily gave Annalisa a bemused look as she held her baby, that seemed to suggest she was thinking, "Men, huh?" Annalisa grinned. "I hear you." Her Prius was located in the staff car park that was up top, rather than the public one down below by the Rainforest Cafe. She hated the narrow 2-mile road that would take her down the hill and back to the lower altitudes of the nearby villages. She wanted to get going sooner rather than later to tackle it. The longer she waited, the more tired she would become. As she headed towards the upper car park, which was located behind the park's Jacobean manor house, Ripley Hall, Annalisa spotted a pair of young lovers amongst the sycamore trees on the lawn. They had obviously spilled out of the manor after some boozy function or wedding party. Half the money that the park made was from hiring out the many rooms and facilities of Ripley Hall and its grounds. There was a lot of profit to be made by supplying yuppies with ample amounts of booze and a warm bed for the night. From what Annalisa gathered from members of the house staff, most of the bosses who hired the property out for their functions were only interested in playing away from home with whatever colleague had been catching their eye most recently. Most of the snooty soirees eventually devolved into the kind of drunken debauchery that would have been right at home in ancient Rome. It made Annalisa feel embarrassed. Embarrassed for those people and their lack of priorities. People like these two, snogging each other's faces off in the freezing cold. Annalisa cleared her throat loudly as she neared the two lovers on the lawn. There was no way to avoid them on her way to her car, and she was damned if she was going to be the one who felt uncomfortable. Let them be the ones to feel awkward. But the young lovers ignored Annalisa's approach. The male of the pair was really going for it, nuzzling at the woman's neck with animalistic passion. She could hear the wet, slopping sounds from several feet away. "Charming. I'd say go get a room, but you already have one," so maybe you should go use it.
Annalisa had seen quite enough. She didn't mind a bit of passion, but she wasn't about to accept their rudeness of ignoring her presence.
"Excuse me," she said. "Perhaps you should take that back inside. The park will be opening up soon. You should probably call it a night."
The couple continued necking.
Annalisa spoke louder. "Hey, time to wrap it up, you two. Party's over."
Finally, she got a response. The male ceased his fevered nuzzling of the woman's neck and turned sideways to look at her. Annalisa went weak from the knees upwards. The sudden fright sent a shockwave of adrenaline through her veins.
"What the hell?"
The man's face was smeared with blood. A sliver of what looked like flesh hung from his cracked and splintered teeth. The young woman he was with was slumped to the ground as he released her, her neck torn open and gushing fluids.
"Holy shit!"
Annalisa took a step backwards, shaking her head and fighting the urge to vomit. Vet or no vet, she had never seen such a horrific sight in all her life. It was like a scene from a Clive Barker novel.
"Back the hell away!" she shouted at the approaching man. "Stay back!"
The man kept coming. She was forced backwards as he came at her with outstretched arms. Her heel caught on a root and she went stumbling down onto her rump. Shooting pains ran up her spine, emanating from her coccyx. She saw stars. The man was on her immediately. He fell down on top of her and started clawing at her shirt. She fought back with her arms and knees, trying to push herself free. But the man was too heavy. All her effort was focused just on keeping his jaws away from her neck. It was crazy, but it seemed like the man was trying to bite her, just like he had the dead woman lying on the ground. Annalisa was trapped. She let loose a scream, crying out for help. Her arms began to ache, and the man on top of her seemed to get heavier and heavier. She pushed with all her might, but it was no use. The man was too strong.
"Jesus! Somebody help me! Help!"
"Anna?" Annalisa craned her neck back and saw Bradley racing towards her.
"Bradley, help me! Get this psycho off!"
Bradley tackled the man and threw him to the ground. Annalisa clambered back to her feet, panting and whining with fright. Bradley cradled her in his arms. The crazy man rose back to his feet, undeterred by being thrown to the floor. Bloody tears poured from his eyes and coloured his cheeks red. Bradley placed himself in front of Annalisa protectively.
"What the hell is with this guy?"
"I don't know, but that woman over there is dead. He ripped her goddamn throat out with his teeth."
"Pissing hell!"
The man stumbled towards them, quick and determined. Blood continued pouring from his eyes as though a faucet had been turned on in his brain. Bradley wound up a punch and let fly. His fist connected hard with the man's jaw and made a sickening thump sound. But the man kept coming. Annalisa was pretty sure the punch would have floored all but a professional boxer, but the man in front of them was still undeterred. He lurched forward and managed to grab a hold of Bradley's collar. The two of them collapsed to the floor in a heap.
"Ah!"
Bradley yelled out in agony as the psychopathic man clamped his teeth down on his hand, grinding and sawing at his middle and ring fingers.
"Help me!"
he screamed. Annalisa had to act fast. She hunted around for something to use. Her eyes fell upon a small picket sign. The rectangle of cardboard read, "Keep off the grass," and was set into the ground by a short metal spike. She yanked it free from the ground and pulled the cardboard away from the spike. Bradley continued to yell out as he struggled with his attacker, blood pouring from his trapped and ruined hand. She pointed the spike at the crazy man. Her hands were shaking like loose leaves in the wind.
"Let go of him right now," she said, "or I'll drive this right through your goddamn eyeball. You'll get one hell of a lobotomy."
The man ignored her and continued ripping and tearing at Bradley's fingers, almost seeming to moan in ecstasy as more and more blood spilled from the wound.
"I'm warning you," she said. "Just get him off me," Bradley yelled. "Stab him!"
Annalisa saw no other option. The man had received his warning and wasn't going to stop. It was as if some wild fever had taken over him, removing any powers of rationality. The man was a vicious animal.
"I warned you."
She leapt forward with the metal spike and drove it into the man's shoulder.
It sunk easily into the soft flesh and sinewy muscle between the trapezius muscle and collarbone, causing what should have been agonizing pain. But the man did not flinch.
Impossible! No one can ignore that amount of trauma.
Annalisa could not believe what was happening. She stood there, stunned and disbelieving. Bradley's screams became a faraway echo in her mind as she thought back to all of the emotional horror she had endured in the last few years, and how it had all led up to this final surreal nightmare that topped them all in one fell swoop.
Maybe I finally found my way to hell.
Then she was back again, her moment of panic gone as quickly as it had arrived. Fear was just a response. It could be contained, even utilized.
Make it work for you, Anna.
She rushed forward and yanked free the spike from the man's shoulder, releasing a jet of blood into the air as the wound unplugged. At that same moment, Bradley's fingers finally came free, the gristle and cartilage finally giving up their battle to stay connected to his body. Bradley wailed like a clowder of cats as his two fingers disappeared and were devoured by his tormentor. Annalisa took her opportunity. The crazy man had lifted his head as he came away with Bradley's severed digits in his jaws. He was chewing the severed fingers ecstatically, even as she lifted the spike in the air and pointed it at his face.
I can't believe I'm about to do this, but he's left me no choice.
She brought the spike down hard, driving it vertically into the man's skull. The sharp metal fought against thick skull bone, but quickly delved deep into the soft tissue beyond.
I just stabbed a guy in the brain.
The man's body went stiff, his chewing stopped. Then he toppled sideways and lay still, a bloody mess on the dew-soaked grass. Bradley shuffled away on his back, clambering as quickly as he could from his now dead attacker. He held his injured hand out in front of him as he stumbled to his feet, and went deathly pale at the sight of his missing appendages.
Come on, she said to him. We need to get you some help.
The two of them took off down the lawns towards Ripley Hall. There were several phone lines inside the manor where they could call for help. There was also plenty of comfortable space to get Bradley settled down while they waited. It would also give Annalisa the chance to find out who the hell the man she just killed was, and why he'd gone so completely berserk. The manor house was lit up like a beacon in the grey haze of the early morning. Its numerous leaded windows glinted in the light of dawn, and several silhouetted figures danced and shifted behind them.
Have people been partying all night? No wonder that guy was crazy. 12 hours partying and drinking is enough to drive anybody nuts.
Annalisa almost had to drag Bradley up the steps to the front doors. He was weak from shock and leaning on her for support.
Come on, she encouraged him. We just need to get you inside, and then you can sit down.
She reached out with her free arm and grasped one of the door's wrought iron handles. She pushed down on it hard and shouldered open one of the two heavy wooden doors. The foyer inside was brightly lit by a crystal chandelier and several wall sconces. But despite all the lights, the reception area was deserted. To Annalisa's immediate right was Ripley Hall's grand dining room and the kitchens beyond. To her left were the function suites and bar. Straight ahead was the winding staircase that led to the two upper floors and bedrooms. She headed for the vacant reception desk. Behind it was the door to the front office. She tried the handle and was disheartened to find it locked.
Where is everybody?
Bradley flopped himself down on a nearby swivel chair and closed his eyes as he fought against the pain he was in. His finger stumps dripped slick trails of blood onto the floor and began forming a sticky pool on the tiles. Annalisa banged on the office door.
Hello? Is anybody in there?
No answer. She turned around and put her hand on Bradley's shoulder.
Just hold in there, she told him.
No problem.
She edged around the reception desk until she was back in front of it. The place seemed deserted, but she had seen people from outside through the windows.
Where the hell is Shawcross?
Shawcross was the manager of Ripley Hall. He would never allow the front desk to go unattended like this. It was always manned 24 hours a day. She palmed the service bell on the reception desk and waited as its chime echoed off the walls and high ceilings. Nobody came, even after ringing the bell several more times.
"This is ridiculous," she said. "Somebody always mans the front desk. Where the hell is Shawcross?"
Bradley tried to focus on her, but his eyes were red and irritated, almost like he had a bad case of hay fever.
"He must be somewhere. The guy never leaves."
"Bit like you," Annalisa said with a grin, trying to lighten the mood. Bradley looked awful, and she didn't want him going into panic. There were noises from nearby, the sound of shuffling feet. Annalisa peered left and right, looking at both the entrance to the function suites and the doorway leading to the dining room.
"Hello?" she shouted. "Hey, we need help here."
"I don't like this," said Bradley in a voice thick with phlegm.
Annalisa examined him for a second and worried about his condition. He was losing blood, but he still seemed far worse than he should have. The shock must really be getting to him. Someone appeared in the arched entrance of the function suites. It was one of the maids. Annalisa could tell by the woman's green tabard.
"Finally," she said, stomping towards the woman. "I need to call an ambulance and get my colleague somewhere comfortable. Do you have a key to the office? I need to perform first aid immediately."
The maid said nothing. She just stood in the doorway and stared at Annalisa.
"Hey," she shouted. "Can you answer me, please? I'm not kidding around here. Bradley is hurt."
Still no reply. The maid continued to stand, staring at Annalisa curiously.
"Look, if you can't help me, can you at least go and get Shawcross?"
The woman stepped forward, and Annalisa saw the blood in her eyes.
"Just like the man outside that attacked me."
The maid screeched at Annalisa and raced across the tiles. Annalisa was rooted to the spot for a second, not understanding what was happening, but survival instinct quickly took over and she leapt behind the reception desk, placing a barrier between her and the charging woman. Bradley screamed out from his chair.
"She's like that guy outside! She's crazy!"
Annalisa could make no sense of it, but she knew Bradley was right. The maid leapt over the desk and reached out to grab a hold of her. Without even thinking about it, Annalisa picked up the keyboard from the desk's computer station and smashed it over the woman's head. Several keys came loose and a bloody wound opened up on the back of the woman's skull. But as Annalisa was now getting used to, the blow seemed to have no effect at all.
"It's like fighting a brick wall."
"Time to try a different tactic." She grabbed a handful of the maid's tabard and pulled her across the desk, beaching the woman on her belly. Then she yanked the keyboard on its cord, releasing some slack. She quickly wound it around the woman's neck and pulled the wire as tight as she could. Then she stepped away. The maid tumbled from the desk and tried to straighten up, but she was held back by the tangled wire around her throat. The more she pulled, the tighter the bonds became, and she was unable to move more than a foot from the desk. Annalisa grabbed the back of Bradley's chair and started rolling him across the foyer.
"What the hell is going on here?" she said. "Where the hell is everyone? And why are people acting like maniacs?"
Several more bodies appeared in the entrance of the function suites. Annalisa could tell right away that the strangers were all dangerous, all like the man outside on the lawn. They snarled and hissed like cobras ready to strike.
"Guess that answers my question about where everybody is."
The mob was a mixture of both staff and guests. A waiter was amongst them, his crisp white shirt stained dark with blood and other fluids. Most of the rest of the group were young revellers, no doubt having come to Ripley Hall for a good time at their company's expense. Somehow, they'd gotten more than they had bargained for. They were all now covered in blood and hanging chunks of their own flesh and the flesh of others. All at once, like a demonic choir, the mob screeched at the top of their lungs. Annalisa became immediately aware of more people behind her at the top of the stairs. She peeked over her shoulder and saw that they too were covered in blood and snarling. Bradley was weeping and cradling his head in his hands.
"We are so screwed!"
They were rushed from both sides, one mob of crazy people coming from the function suites, another from atop the staircase. Annalisa grabbed Bradley's chair and raced him across the tiles towards the only place she had left to run, the grand dining room. She hurried through the archway on her left. The cavernous dining room was empty. Its huge mahogany tables and ornate chairs lay crooked and disturbed, as if some great battle had been waged there. Blood coated everything. Annalisa almost slipped in a puddle of it as she sprinted across the room. If not for Bradley's chair offering a handhold, she may have gone down on her face. The mob was coming up fast behind her. They screeched and wailed inhumanely as they leapt over chairs in their pursuit of her. If not for their wild lack of coordination, Annalisa would already have been captured.
And that's still exactly what will happen if I don't find somewhere fast.
Ripley Hall's kitchens were up ahead, accessed via a pair of swinging oak doors. Annalisa raced towards them desperately, but the effort of pushing Bradley in his chair was gradually slowing her down. The mad rush of bodies behind her was gaining.
They're going to eat me alive! I'm going to die without ever having a clue why!
Suddenly the doors ahead of her opened. A face popped out from the gap, leaning out from inside the kitchen.
Come on! Said the stranger, a woman. Quickly! They're right behind you!
Annalisa summoned a final burst of strength and leant forward against Bradley's chair. She managed to pick up speed, but her attackers gained on her with every step.
I'm not going to make it. These psychopaths are going to kill me. I'm not going to make it!
Annalisa hit the kitchen doors at speed, using Bradley as an unwilling battering ram. The door spilled open and the chair she was pushing tipped over onto the floor. Bradley went sprawling onto the tiles and let out a moan. Annalisa's legs gave out and she went tumbling to her knees right beside him. The next thing she was aware of was people scurrying around behind her, shouting at one another and pushing around heavy objects.
Come on, said one of the strangers. Get the table back up against the doors.
I'm doing it, I'm doing it, said another.
Damn, they're at the door. They're going to get in.
No, no, we're fine. Just keep pushing.
Together, the group of strangers managed to get the kitchen doors reclosed and barricaded them with a heavy wooden table and one of the room's industrial fridges. The bloodthirsty mob outside beat their fists against the oak doors, but the ancient wood held firm, designed to stand the test of time. Annalisa peeled herself off the tiles and crawled over to Bradley, who was lying on his side and wheezing. His skin had become alabaster pale, and his finger stumps continued bleeding onto the floor.
Is he bitten?
Asked a voice that she recognized. It was Shawcross, the manager of Ripley Hall. She stared up at the man, surprised by his wild ginger hair that was usually so neatly combed, and his flush red face that was usually so pale. She shook her head in confusion.
What?
Shawcross huffed.
Bradley, he said, did one of those things bite him?
Things? What are you talking about?
Shawcross smashed his fist against the wall.
Fuck's sake, will you just answer the question, you dumb bitch?
Annalisa was on her feet in a flash. How dare anyone speak to her in that way, especially a wretch like Shawcross?
Who the hell do you think...
Yes, I'm bitten,
Bradley uttered from the floor. He held up the mangled stumps where his fingers used to be.
I need help.
Shawcross shook his head and marched across the room, over to one of the aluminium work counters.
You're way beyond help, he said,
and then yanked a wooden meat tenderizer from a set of hooks on the wall. He started back towards Bradley, and the strangers in the room spread out to the sides of the kitchen, as though they wanted to give him space. Annalisa watched Shawcross cross the tiles with the mallet clutched tightly in his bony fists.
What the hell are you doing? She asked him incredulously.
What does it bloody well look like? We have to kill him!
Bradley's eyes went wide and he started trying to get up. He couldn't manage it, though, and flopped down onto his side again. Annalisa stood over her colleague protectively.
Are you insane? She said. You're not killing anybody, you lunatic!
He's serious, said a nearby woman.
It was the one who had opened up the doors for Annalisa and let her inside the kitchen. She seemed anxious, but there was also a steely determination in her misty blue eyes.
Have you not seen what happens when someone gets bitten?
Annalisa shook her head and held out a hand to Shawcross to keep him from advancing any further.
No, I haven't. I have no clue what's going on here. All I know is that there's a dead woman in the gardens and people keep attacking me. Can someone here explain that to me, please?
Shawcross sighed and leant himself up against one of the kitchen counters. He lowered the meat tenderizer so that it hung less threateningly down by his thigh.
It started in the middle of the night, he said. Everything went to hell.
Chapter 13. Annalisa managed to get Bradley back onto the swivel chair and fetched him a glass of water. He was unable to take more than a couple of sips. She couldn't help but notice the way everybody in the room kept eyeballing him suspiciously, like he was a bomb ready to go off. There was only a handful of people in the room, but they all looked terrified.
What happened to these people?
Okay, she said to Shawcross, moving over to the aluminium counter in the center of the room. Let's hear it then. I want to know exactly what's going on. Shawcross shrugged. Well, I'm afraid I'll have to disappoint you there. None of us can tell you exactly what is going on. We can only tell you what we know. Good enough, she said. Firstly, though, how come you're even here, Anna? I was on call. Bradley needed assistance with a birth. Shawcross nodded, but seemed uninterested. The zoo and amusement park outside were never any of his concern. He was only in charge of the manor and its use as a private venue and hotel. He didn't care about anything else. The guy was a tool. Everything went okay, by the way, she told him, on the off chance he was interested. I was just heading for my car to go home when I encountered a pair of strangers in the gardens. Shawcross seemed interested again. He leaned forward. Oh, what happened? It was a man and a woman. The woman was dead, ripped apart by the man. The guy came at me like a lunatic. If it wasn't for Bradley coming to my rescue, I would be a goner. And Bradley got bit? Annalisa nodded. Yes, but I thought you were going to be the one explaining things, so why am I the one doing all the talking? Shawcross sighed. Okay, fine. It started out as a night like any other. I was hosting a corporate function just like I have a million times before. Drinks were flowing, bar tabs were rising, and not a single person had started a fight. It was as smooth as ever. But a few people were under the weather. Annalisa frowned. Under the weather? Not everyone was ill, added the woman who had let her into the kitchen. Just a couple people. Jeff Danks and Bob Foster from the Southampton branch were the worst off. Yes, Shawcross agreed. Just a couple of people were sick at first. I assume they just had the sniffles. There were about three or four of them in total, all sneezing and sweating. None of them were getting involved with the rest of the party. They didn't dance, they barely drank, they just sat there looking like death warmed up. Annalisa shrugged. She didn't know where this was going. How is that connected to what's happening now? Because they were the first to turn nasty, for want of a better word. I checked on them throughout the evening, of course, asking if they needed assistance or even just some paracetamol, but they were barely responsive. By about 1 a.m. they looked like they were at death's door. One of them even had a nosebleed. The last thing I decided, before everything turned upside down, was to ask Stephen and Antoine to help the sick guests up to their rooms. They were bringing down the mood of the other guests. Annalisa knew the two busboys Shawcross was referring to. Antoine was a student from French Guiana and had an interest in animals. He'd come and spoken with Annalisa many times, a gentle boy. Stephen was a typical English teenager, earning a bit of pocket money while he decided on what he really wanted to do with the rest of his life. "Where are Stephen and Antoine now?" she asked. "The sick guests attacked them. They just sprung to life like wild animals and took the poor boys down to the ground." Annalisa remembered the man who had attacked her outside and nodded. Wild animals was as good a description as any. "They tore out poor Stephen's throat before he even knew what was happening. I have no idea what I will tell his family." Annalisa turned around and examined the barricaded doors at the front of the kitchen. The oak panels shook with each blow of a fist behind them, and then she glanced at Bradley. The young veterinary assistant was barely conscious, but at least his hand had finally stopped bleeding. "They just attacked," she said. "But that makes no sense."
"Must be a virus or something," somebody muttered. "I bet terrorists did it, like that attack on the cruise ship last week."
"Or it could be some kind of new drug," added another, "like that bath salts thing in America." "Next thing we knew," Shawcross continued, ignoring the various conspiracy theories that had begun to bandy themselves around the room, "half the guests were injured and bleeding, or dead. 30 guests ripped to pieces in minutes." Annalisa placed a hand over her mouth. She could hardly believe what she was hearing. "That's not the worst part," Shawcross added. Those that were left of us eventually managed to get the sick guests under control. We grabbed a hold of them and locked them in the wine cellar beneath the bar. Some of us got bitten or scratched in the process, but together we managed to succeed. We thought we were safe, that the whole thing was over. He wiped the back of his hand against his clammy forehead and ran his fingers through his damp ginger hair. I put a call through to emergency services, and those of us left standing set about trying to help those who were not. He looked at Bradley and shook his head. We have to deal with him right now, before it's too late. Annalisa put her hand out to keep him in place. Nobody is doing anything until I understand what it is you're all afraid of.
Isn't it obvious?
Shawcross almost shouted in her face.
He's going to become one of them!
She stood up straight and grabbed a glass from beside the sink. She filled it to the top with water and then swigged it down in one gulp. She shook her head and stared down at the floor. It was only then that she noticed all the dried blood on the kitchen tiles.
What the hell happened in here?
Shawcross let out a long breath that seemed to lower his gangly height by a full 2 inches. He was acting nothing like the organized and confident man she was used to.
Follow me, he said to her. The rest of you stay here. Be vigilant. Find something to tie Bradley up.
Annalisa followed the man to the back of the kitchen. He led her to an industrial chiller and placed a hand on its long aluminium handle.
You ready for this? He asked her.
I don't even know what this is.
Well, you're about to find out.
He yanked open the door and a mist of cold air immediately escaped and invaded Annalisa's lungs. It took a few moments for the mist to clear. She could not believe what was inside.
If this is a nightmare, then please let me wake up.
These people were all merely injured when we holed up in here. Just cuts and bruises, mostly. But by the time we locked ourselves inside the kitchen, we knew what would become of them. We'd already seen it happen at the bar. Annalisa stared at all the people tied up in the freezer. They thrashed about, spitting and hissing, some of them screeching at the sight of her. Ragged wounds covered many of them, while some appeared almost uninjured. All of them had the sickness, though. Blood smeared each of their orifices, and their skin was puffy and red. Annalisa stared at each one of them in turn, daring not to blink for fear that something terrible would happen while she was not watching.
What happened in the bar? She asked. She needed to know more. She needed to make some sense of what she was seeing.
Like I said, we were helping the wounded. Some people were dead, their throats and stomachs ripped open, but others just had minor bites and scratches. We tried to patch up their wounds, but they seemed to deteriorate fast. One woman only had a bite on her wrist, and she passed out unconscious and wouldn't wake back up again. We assumed it was the shock. I was feeling pretty weak myself. But then the others began to rise.
Rise?
Shawcross nodded. The wounded were unconscious when the people we could have sworn were dead started getting up and coming after us. Young Stephen's neck had been ripped to shreds, but he was back on his feet, stumbling around like some kind of drunk. All of the people who we were positive were dead got back to their feet. We assumed that we had gotten it wrong, that the people had not been dead at all, but then one of us got too near. The dead came after us like something out of a horror movie. But then, just when we couldn't dream of things getting worse, all of the unconscious people snapped awake and came after us as well. They were quick as lightning, not like the dead ones, and outnumbered us 3-1. We were lucky that any of us made it out alive. A group of us ended up in this kitchen, but half our number was badly injured and bleeding. It was too late for them. We already knew.
Annalisa pointed at the people in the freezer. You mean these people?
Yes. We'd all seen what happened to those who'd been injured in the bar lounge. They got very sick very fast, passed out unconscious, and then woke up again with whatever it is that's driving people insane. When one of the injured guests started feeling weak from his injuries, he volunteered to be restrained in case he became violent like the others. We attached him to the refrigeration racks in the freezer and turned up the thermostat so he wouldn't freeze. Then slowly, one by one, all of the people with injuries, no matter how small, started to come down with the sickness. Eventually, we had no choice but to secure everyone in the freezer for safety, theirs and ours.
He let out a small laugh that was more of an exasperated huff than anything else.
You know, it's funny, he said, but not a single one of them protested as we locked them up inside this fridge. It's as though they knew they were doomed, resigned to their fates.
They're not doomed, said Annalisa. They're just ill. We need to call for help.
You're forgetting that I already did. I placed the call about, he looked at his watch, 8 hours ago. Nobody has arrived yet. We've been waiting in here all night, listening to those monsters outside tear the place apart. He seemed almost close to tears at the thought of the manor being out of his control. Then we heard you shouting, he said. To be quite frank, Anna, I thought it was a bad idea opening up the doors for you. But Kimberly didn't feel it was right to leave you out there to die. It was her that opened the doors for you. Annalisa patted him on the arm. Her usual opinion of Shawcross was that he was a stuffy, pedantic arsehole, but she could tell he was genuinely shaken by everything that had happened. He seemed fragile to the point of breaking. It's okay, she said to him. You were just being pragmatic, and that's good. He seemed relieved to hear her say that. Annalisa took another glance at the prisoners. Volunteers, in the fridge again. All of them were glaring at her and reaching out with their hands. They were all making that wretched screeching sound. They only make that noise when they can see you, Shawcross said. I think it's how they let each other know when they find someone to attack. Fresh meat or whatever. Annalisa cringed at the description. She didn't like to think of herself as meat in any scenario. This is all impossible, she said. There is no known condition that could cause this kind of behaviour. Cannibalistic rage? It's insane. The stuff of fiction. Shawcross slammed the freezer door shut. The screeching immediately stopped. I can't make any more sense of this than you, but I have one last thing to show you that might make you accept what we're up against. Annalisa took in a breath and fought against the rising sickness in her stomach. How much more could there be to see? At the very back of the vast industrial kitchen was a door, which Shawcross now stood in front of. Annalisa assumed it was the pantry. What's inside there? She asked. See for yourself. He twisted the door handles and pulled it wide open. Annalisa shook her head. Just when I think things are screwed up enough. Inside the pantry, hanging from a light fixture by what appeared to be a bright red tie, was a body. It was kicking and wriggling as it hung by its neck. When I said everybody went willingly into the freezer, I wasn't entirely truthful, Shawcross explained. James was one of the company managers at the function last night. He never owned up to having been bitten. None of us knew. He covered it up with his sleeve. While we were all distracted with moving the injured people into the freezer, he must have snuck off on his own. I found him hanging like this a few hours ago. I haven't told the others.
He's been like this for hours? That can't be. Nobody could
survive being hanged by their neck all that time, he finished the sentence for her. No, they could not. This man is categorically dead. Check his pulse if you don't believe me, but I would probably advise against getting that close. Annalisa watched the businessman swinging back and forth by his tie. The purple ligature marks around his neck were proof enough that the blood supply and oxygen had been cut off to his brain. There was no way the man could still be alive. What she was looking at was an animated corpse.
Impossible.
We need to get out of here, she said. We need to get every doctor and scientist in the country out here, working this thing out. Whatever is happening must have some explanation. Shawcross stared at her. We can't leave. There's no way.
What?
Of course there is. There's a door marked fire escape over there. It's locked. I know it shouldn't be, but I don't like the thought of leaving the kitchen unsecured during the night, so I always lock it once the cooks go home. She shook her head and cursed. Great idea. So how on earth do we get out of this bloody kitchen? Shawcross looked over his shoulder towards the other end of the kitchen. The only way out, he said, is to go back through the house. Before Annalisa had time to reply, a scream echoed through the kitchen. Chapter 14. The screams came from Kimberly, the woman who had let Annalisa inside the kitchen.
The woman's misty blue eyes were now stretched wide as she fought desperately with Bradley. He had her up against the wall and was fighting to get at her with his chomping teeth. Slobber fell from his mouth and plastered his chin. His eyes were bleeding.
Shawcross was right. Bradley is one of them.
No one in the room was helping Kimberly. They all stood back, frozen in fear. Annalisa ran over and shouted at Bradley to stop, but it was no good. He wasn't listening anymore, and Kimberly was weakening. She needed help. But it was too late. Bradley slipped free of Kimberly's grasp, swatting aside her arms with ease. Like a starving animal, he sunk his teeth into her windpipe, cutting dead her screams and reducing them to a pained gargle. A gout of blood expelled from between her lips, and her eyes flickered, as if trying to comprehend what they were seeing. The others stood by and did nothing.
Why is nobody helping her?
I told you, Shawcross shouted. I told you this would happen, but you wouldn't listen. Annalisa fought against a growing lump in her throat. She spluttered as she spoke.
I'm sorry.
Shawcross still held the meat tenderizer in his hand. He rushed up to Bradley with it raised over his head. He swung the wooden mallet in a wild arc. The first blow opened a wide divot in Bradley's skull, but it didn't stop him from chewing on Kimberly's neck. The second blow dropped him like a switch had been flipped in his brain. His legs folded, and he hit the floor in a crumpled heap. Kimberly looked at Shawcross like he was her savior. She even managed to smile amid the thick, dark blood that spilled from between her lips. Shawcross smiled back at her, almost pityingly. Then he smashed the mallet into the side of her skull, cracking open her temple and sending her to the floor. Annalisa threw up on the tiles. The sight of Shawcross bludgeoning Bradley and then that innocent woman to death was the final straw. She should have been shocked, but somehow she knew he was just doing what was necessary. Kimberly had been infected the moment Bradley had bitten her. There was no place for mercy. If Annalisa had understood that earlier, perhaps Kimberly would still be alive.
She let me inside, Annalisa spluttered. She saved me, and now she's dead.
Shawcross stared at her with bulging eyes. Blood spattered his face and streaked his ginger hair. With the mallet in his hand, he looked like some kind of Scandinavian berserker.
I told you this would happen, but I let you have your own way. I should have dealt with Bradley the moment you brought him in. A woman is now dead because of my mistake.
Annalisa shook her head.
This wasn't your fault.
No, he said, thrusting the bloody meat tenderizer in her face. You're right. It's your fault.
Annalisa looked down at Kimberly and Bradley. Was it really her fault that this had happened? Was a kindly, courageous woman dead because of her?
I want to get out of here, somebody said. I'm going to lose my mind if I don't get some air.
Annalisa took a deep breath through her nose and noticed a cloying odour hanging in the air. She didn't know how she'd missed the smell to begin with, but it was unmistakable. It was the stench of death. Shawcross was still irate. The others in the room kept their distance as he raged and gesticulated angrily.
We can't leave, he said. Those things are out there. As soon as we step foot outside, they'll be on us like a pack of bloody hyenas.
But we can't stay in here forever,
someone said.
I'm leaving, said somebody else.
Shawcross huffed.
You'd rather die a horrible death than stay here a while until help arrives?
Annalisa thought about the call to emergency services that Shawcross had made hours ago, and how help was still yet to arrive. She didn't like any plan that involved waiting around to be rescued, because she wasn't sure any help was coming. They needed a better plan. How about causing a distraction, she said. Shawcross glared at her irritably, but his silence suggested he was willing to listen to suggestions. Those things seem to operate on sight and sound more than anything else. Maybe if we could lead them away.